of life. Imagine a hand where one of the fingers drops to the floor and thinks it can have an independent life without being connected to the body. That is what is happening today. Humankind is acting like separate fingers that have forgotten the connection to the original source of life. Sandra Ingerman. June 24th, 2017, Larapata, Peru. It's Friday morning, and I'm following Roman and Elton around the crowded San Pedro Market in central Cusco. They have a 2-page shopping list that was given to them by the folks at the land, who have requested both materials for the center and items for personal use. Today is the last day of my trip, and I've decided to spend it helping Roman and Elton shop. My flight back to San Francisco departs in 4 hours, so I might as well do something productive to fill the time. Ducking and weaving between stalls of potions, produce, and power tools, we make our way through the maze of merchants, stopping here and there to haggle and purchase. We walk into the open doorway of a mattress merchant, hoping to cross one of the heftiest items off the list. 5 beds for the new healing dieta huts that are being built back at Paititi. As Roman pokes and prods at different plastic-wrapped mattresses and makes observations about the pricing and quality that are clearly intended to help his negotiating position, my mind begins to wander to what life will be like when I get back home. On these excursions into the sacred outback of South and Central America, your rigid patterning around the daily grind of modern life gradually, or sometimes not so gradually, tends to fall away. The illusions that you've built up around you are challenged right from the outset, their origins and toxic effects becoming painfully apparent. After a few weeks of immersion and surrender, the volume on these neurotic impulses is dialed down and sometimes goes away completely. In its place come happiness, simplicity, purpose, and peace. During the spans of time in between these adventures, as I reimmerse myself in the modern world, I try to be as conscious as I can about keeping alive inside me the ancestral way of being that permeates these native cultures. There are usually 1 or 2 major rearrangements to the structure of my life when I get back to the States, intended to make my world more congruent with my highest ideals. It's sometimes as simple as repositioning or removing objects that are stagnant in my living space, or adding an abalone shell to my kitchen counter to remind me to make more sage Palo Santo offerings in the morning. But these adjustments are often more interpersonal, like sitting down with a dear friend or lover and sharing an epiphany about the way you've been interacting with each other. Conversations like this can lead to the formation of a new sacred contract, like, I now understand this about myself, and if you see me embodying that negative belief or disposition, I give you full permission to communicate it to me directly. The more intimate readjustments are the hardest, but they tend to endure the test of time with lasting impact. But staying immersed in the more elusive way of being, the essence of what I felt while gliding gracefully down a precarious Incan trail in the dark of night, is hard to hold in the modern world. Until this recent expedition, I had caught only momentary glimpses of this realm of consciousness, usually at the pinnacle of a plant medicine ceremony. But something has shifted in my late-night coca ceremonies with Roman, and I'm now in semi-constant connection with it. The imperceptible disappearance or dissipation of this feeling is actually the most insidious part of returning. If it were stripped away in a violent instant upon setting foot back in California, it would be at least obvious enough to make some decisions around. But it isn't this way. The essence sometimes continues to shine, fully intact for days and weeks as I navigate my old life with clear sight, building and repairing relationships and my orientation toward my surroundings with full presence. Only over time do I begin to feel this wholeness diminish like a lantern burning up its final few drops of oil, replaced by unexplainable plummets in peacefulness and the usual substitutes for deeper life flow, like coffee, alcohol, the consumption of mainstream media. Something that Roman said keeps flashing through my mind as I anticipate this conundrum. When I got here a few weeks ago, still reeking of the modern world, he gently observed the thoughts and behaviors I was conveying held an imprint of perceived separation. "Nick," he said, "this notion of a private and separate internality that is at odds with the perceived externality is part of the disease of the Western world. I was convinced that I was Nick, and the rest of the world was external to me. I was operating as if my thoughts and emotions existed only within me and had no impact on the outside world, other than those that compelled me into physical action. But this is clearly a fallacy, as evidenced by what happened to the film crew and me while we were making The Sacred Science. Though we tried to maintain a professional distance, all five of us were sucked into the same existential supernova that our jungle patients were experiencing. We realized the hard way that our intentions and internal dialogues were not safely stowed away back in the States, waiting to greet us upon our return. There is no way to stay on the sidelines if you want to engage fully with the world around you. There is no insulation between your consciousness, your intentions, and the energy you are projecting toward the people and events around you. There is only lack of awareness of this. Being present in your own reality is not just some abstract shamanic state of enlightenment. It's a state of essential honesty with ourselves and the world around us that we humans should be aspiring to every day. Whether that day is spent on a wooden boat headed down the Ucayali River or in a mundane office cubicle, the distraction of our immediate surroundings is just an illusion, something that tempts us to ignore the story of who we really are. I recall another conversation I had with Roman just a few nights ago, during a coca ceremony, when it occurred to me that when I returned to the States, I was going to have a very hard time holding on to the soul upgrade he had given me. "I wish I could move my entire family down here so we could all live in this way," I said. "Live in what way?" he asked. "You know, with deeper connection to who we actually are in each moment. Real conversations and sense of tribe," I tried to explain. "How come you can't do that where you live?" he asked. "I want to, but it's so hard. My folks and a lot of my friends don't understand what I'm doing down here. They think I'm nuts." "That, brother, is the work," he said. "Your work. Don't make the mistake of attaching what you've experienced here to any time or place. This experience is available to you anywhere you go. It's just a matter of learning how to tap into it." "There is no magical place to do this work," he said. "You and I happen to be in Peru, but the entire world is our training ground. Remember, no matter where you go, there you are." The sound of Roman's bartering in the market shakes me from my thoughts for a second. "I'll take 3 of the single mattresses," he is saying. "But we need them to be foam, not feather. Nick, you wanted an alpaca blanket to bring back with you, right? Those ones over there are of a really high craftsmanship." Seeing Roman haggling with a vendor over the price of mattresses reminds me that even he is not fully isolated from the mundane details of modern life. As I wander through the crammed bedding shop toward the blankets he suggested, I wonder again what it is that keeps derailing me from maintaining the way of being I learned in the Amazon when I get back home. This time the answer comes back at me almost instantaneously. I have a lack of trust in the people in my life back home, and a base fear that if I stop actively willing things to happen, I won't be able to provide for my family. These two things are central to our way of life in the Western world. We grow up knowing that we'll be booted out of the house at age 18, maybe go to college or straight into the workforce to begin fending for ourselves. If we're successful, we wind up being able to afford our own homes, with our own fenced-off turf, allowing us space or separation from everyone else, including our own families. This is the foundation of the American dream, but it comes with a hefty price tag. We are taught to work as hard and ferociously as we can, to excel in our given occupations, so that we can stockpile some cash to pay the mortgage or rent, student loan, daycare, health insurance, life insurance if we're lucky, phone bill, car loan, and hopefully have something left to buy groceries. Our culture pushes us to have one hell of a convincing backstory in order to inspire trust and earn greater responsibilities, i.e., good jobs. If we're good enough at learning the Western game of survival, separation, and competition, we get to have higher quality stuff and heightened protection from the elements, disease, hunger, and the criminal justice system. This in turn feeds an inner emptiness that we know no way to mitigate except with more of the same. I was no different when I first began this seeker search. I had an innate curiosity about the subject I was investigating, but a naive expectation that I'd be able to film these cultures objectively, remaining untouched by the magical religious interventions they use. But before I was ever granted access to film anything, I underwent a series of rituals that shattered everything I knew myself to be. After the initial terror of seeing it all stripped away so easily, followed by the abyss of realizing that I did not know, nor had I ever really known, who I was or what this reality we live in is, I was able to reconstruct something new with the shards of shattered me that remained on the floor. Something more aware of the fallacies inherent in the Western ethos and of the truths that lie beyond. But like everything else in this world, the new me that stepped out of these healing rites wasn't and isn't permanent. I've earned the trust of a shaman or two, and this has opened the door to further contacts and invitations to continue the journey. But over the course of these past few years, new illusions, subtler this time around, have begun to cling and cluster around the core of the essential Nick, as evidenced by the new level of inner work that was laid before me in the chapel on the night of my last ayahuasca ceremony. Every time the slate is cleaned, it's only a matter of time before new and improved storylines of sabotage gradually take hold. They are a universal constant, a self-impairing feature of the human mind. I'm starting to identify these shadows as any attachment or resistance to an unforeseeable outcome. These thought forms appear reasonable and helpful to have, but tear us out of the present moment, turning us into busy-brained, prattling monkeys. I pretend to closely examine the barrel of alpaca blankets Roman pointed to, but my head is elsewhere, witnessing all the patterns that have been shed this time around. Nothing matters but the way of being. Remember that it's always there if you just let the rest of the thought constructs drop away. Eyes on the path, not on the edge. A few hours later, I sit at my gate in the Alejandro Velasco Astete International Airport, feeling the dissonance caused by the familiar Western-style surrounds of a modern travel hub, while still technically on the ground in Peru. I wonder how many months I'll be able to hold on to the state of clarity I feel right now. It's more than a living meditation. It's an expansive, childlike contentedness, paired with deeper intelligence. Everything makes sense. I can see the trajectory my life has taken to get me to this very moment, every event that is currently transpiring, and the future I envision for myself. It's all as plain as day. I don't want to lose this again. I undo my backpack straps and pull out my trusty Moleskine pocket notepad and a ballpoint pen. I am going to create a protocol for myself to follow. I know the core mission. nurture, and embody this way of being, no matter where I am. My newly proposed soul survival formula will be aimed at keeping me on the straight and narrow spirit path, even in the concrete jungles and strip-mauled towns of the Western world. I begin taking inventory of the lessons I've learned in the Amazon and the Andes, noting the practices that Roman and the other shamans turn to in order to keep themselves centered and vibrant in times of intensity. This list sprouts more lists, which will turn into days of research and refinement, ultimately shaping into some modus operandi that I will use to guide the rest of my life. The personal journey I propose to you is as epic and ancient as the Amazon rainforest itself, and appears in the literature of pretty much every world culture. It starts with separation or departure. Then come the trials and resulting wisdom of initiation. And finally, there is the return and reintegration into society with a more complete understanding of oneself and one's place in the world. But to that, I will add one more thing. You don't need to go anywhere to experience this journey. There is no expensive plane ticket, time taken off from work, or hefty shopping spree at the Wilderness Apparel store. It may not be as romantic or outwardly glamorous as a trip to the jungle, but it can have an even greater impact on your life. The 8 patients we brought down to the Amazon were extremely sick, but on a soul level, the core problems they were working to resolve were nothing different from those we all experience in our own lives. Attachment to our story, detachment from our true selves, stagnation due to stale patterns of thought that are not serving us, fear of what others might think, fear of who we truly are inside, aversion to being vulnerable, lack of trust in ourselves and others, and ultimately, fear of the impermanence of it all. That is, fear of death. The good news is that these seemingly toxic orientations toward our reality are 100% human. The tough news is that they must be acknowledged, understood, and dissolved in order for us to be healthy and benefit from the underlying wisdom they hold. We can go to the ends of the earth to work on these things, but unless we as individuals are willing to show up right now and make the choice to be good to ourselves and do what we know is in alignment with our highest ideals, there isn't a shaman in the world who can save us. As a father of 2 now, I don't have enough time and flexibility in my life to run down to the jungle every time I need a dose of Pachamama essence. So I operate on the basis of a few core principles that help me see the medicine path no matter where I am. As you've probably surmised from the preceding chapters, this approach isn't a quick fix. Unfortunately, nothing truly valuable comes easy. This work is a moving tapestry, woven from ancient and present wisdom that can drastically change your life. But it takes perseverance and practice. Patience is the first lesson on any spirit path. One of the hardest things to learn is that there will never be a moment when you will feel like you finally arrived. As soon as you crest one mountain, you always see just far enough to get a glimpse of others that have yet to be summited. This understanding can be a little deflating once it really sinks in. What is there to aim for if all my labor only adds up to more challenges? If you think about it, this concept of striving to achieve some far-off dream is sewn into the fabric of modern reality. It's the notion that we just need to hold our breaths a little longer, tolerate self-imposed stress for a few more months, years, or decades until the payoff comes. We're mortgaging out our very existence to some illusion of a happier future that we hope will become real once we've paid off all the debt. It's a moving mirage, that tricks us as we stagger across the desert, thirsty and tired. The oasis is not a lie. It does exist, but it isn't where we think it is. The true reward is about cultivating a real but entirely metaphysical space between ourselves and the outside world. It's about realizing that there is room in each moment for you to be nurtured and thrive within, maintaining clear-sightedness no matter what life situation you encounter. This is Earth Wisdom. As long as you live and breathe on this planet, you will have access to it. It isn't native to any one ancient tradition, but is a core belief of many sacred ancestral disciplines worldwide. Walking the healing path is a matter of endurance, and if we treat it like a sprint race, we're going to find ourselves overwhelmed and burnt out. Members of the Tarahumara tribe in Mexico run 100 miles at a time, but not as a competition. They do it as part of a celebration. They aren't hoping the run is going to end. It's just the opposite. They learn to live and find joy in each step along the way. Long-distance runners, rock climbers, and other endurance athletes often have to overcome many inner demons to allow their bodies to do the impossible. That is what the practices at the end of this chapter are intended to do on a spiritual level. Show you the unthinkable so you can achieve the impossible. Take a deep breath, hydrate, and settle in. Stepping onto the path itself is your solace. If you are on it, you've already arrived. Your spiritual training ground. What would happen if you re-envisioned your life and everything in it as a spiritual training ground? If, instead of looking at each day, each minute, each moment as something to get through until the easy part comes, you began to take a tally of how you are engaging with every circumstance you encounter, no matter how subtle or substantial. How much of the real you are you offering to yourself and those you interact with? Where are you getting derailed? Where are you excelling? It doesn't matter how old we get. Playing games is something we humans just can't get enough of. Why not make a little game out of the serious thing we call life? Don't worry. This doesn't require any more technology than you have with you. All you need is your body, your mind, your consciousness, and anything the outside world brings you. If life were a game, what would your benchmarks of winning be? Mine would be growth, service, love, wisdom, excitement, and sense of tribe. You're welcome to borrow mine, or come up with your own. What would an indicator of losing be? The top candidates for me are feelings of shame, anger, ignorance, complacency, and stress. I left out fear and frustration because these are natural emotions, especially when we're pushing past our comfort zones. Frustration is tricky because it can turn into anger or shame if we're not careful, but in its pure form, it can be fuel for change. When setting the gauges on your internal dashboard, just make sure to be honest with yourself about what your own personal metrics are for a fulfilling and joyful life. Mission 1. Notice. Once you have both the goals and areas of derailment set, the rest is easy. Start walking through your life, trying to stay fully aware of how you're engaging with your surroundings. The goals are really there as a target status quo, how you want your life to be. Consider them to be cairns on a hiking trail, stacks of rocks that show you that you're on the right path. But we also need to be aware of the cliffs and rock slides so we'll be checking in with that internal index card of emotional pitfalls as we walk through each day. Not because we're trying to avoid them, but to begin charting the various emotions and corresponding thoughts that light up in given circumstances. We can't extract the wisdom from a challenge if we don't acknowledge it is occurring. Many of us have so many shields, safeguards, and backroom deals with ourselves that the act of simply noticing the triggers as they occur is a hefty task in itself. If you are listening to this book in a linear fashion, you heard my words about the way of being in chapter 14. This state is available to all of us, and often it's there with us when we wake up in the morning, before the curveballs of life begin to fly. Assuming we start our days off at zero, neither negative or positive, ask yourself, where is my essential, fully connected state getting derailed throughout my day? Have you ever had one of those days that begin beautifully, but by mid-afternoon you're a ball of nerves, checking in for the next flight to Crazy Town? Looking back, it's often hard to even pinpoint what went wrong and when. But this is exactly where the medicine lies. Like the 24 still photographs that make up each second of film you watch in a motion picture, each moment of our lives holds an incredible amount of information. It might seem basic, but the ability to notice the subtleties of our experience in each moment is the door to personal evolution. Mission 2. Remember. A self-sabotaging mechanism that we humans come conveniently equipped with is forgetfulness. This is advantageous when it comes to letting go and moving beyond traumatic events from our past, but sometimes it can get in the way of our spiritual growth. It's one thing to notice when you're being derailed from your essential state, but remembering the incident so it can be worked on at a later time is where a lot of us falter. Don't dwell, don't obsess, just remember. Mission 3. Make a list. Now that you have your special X-ray spiritual training glasses on, and you're walking bravely through the cosmic obstacle course of life, it's time to start making a list of the particular points of challenge that you're noticing. Again, we're not talking about external challenges like a flat tire, parking ticket, or cracked windshield here. Apparently my negatives are all car-related. Note to self, the reader knows too much. Outer life disturbances are going to happen. That's the universal constant you can always set your watch to. But how are you reacting to each one? This is what will decide whether it makes the list. What happened to you today that elicited a disproportionate emotional response? Where did you feel a negative surge of emotion well up that was beyond your control? Or just the opposite? Did something occur today that should have birthed a negative or positive emotion, but didn't? Sometimes numbness or a lack of feeling in response to an external event can be just as significant. Be careful not to be tricked by the spackle and paint that your ego slaps on the shadows and cracks in your psyche. Unless you're a newborn child, I guarantee you have sore spots in there. Inner bruises come with living on this planet, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with them as long as they are seen, mended, and used as portals for growth. Mission 4. Find the medicine. This entire framework is centered on the shamanic principle that everything is medicine. It doesn't matter how painful, terrifying, or unpleasant the experience is. The master has learned how to transform these externalities into wisdom and fuel for greater spaciousness and compassion. Think of it as an inoculation against infectious disease. By exposing ourselves to circumstances that trigger a negative response in our pain body, we allow our organism to build up spiritual and psychological immunity to future run-ins with these particular scenarios. But if we avoid taking our medicine or overdo it with the dose, we stay stunted and complacent. How do you find the medicine? This is one of the hardest tasks on the spirit path. So you're open, you're noticing the subtlety, and you just got triggered for the seventh time today by the same thing. You know this interaction is your kryptonite, and it's an unavoidable part of your reality. But the lesson or hidden wisdom is not revealing itself to you. Well, first off, congratulations on being awake. That's at least half the battle. As Roman would say, this is the work, my friend. We moderners are living in the age of the quick fix. Born into a culture of convenience where everything is or should be solvable in a fast and painless jiffy. Everything is speeding up, faster, better, more productive, while the quality of our interactions with others and ourselves is withering away on the vine. People don't know who or what in the hell they are anymore. Most of us still think we're our names. Think about that for a second. If you ask a typical earth dweller who they are, 9 times out of 10, they will tell you their name. Well, I sure as hell am not Nick. I'm a shitload more and a shitload less. I'm an unquantifiable flesh-encapsulated amalgamation of life force. I'm a temporary channel for the anonymous, unrefined driver of consciousness flowing in through the heart, up to the brain, and then down through neurological pathways into the hand of the meat suit known as Nick, who is writing this book to awaken itself in you, the reader. Did it work? It takes a lot to step up and look your own work right in the eye. There will always be more to do once this bit is done. So a little advice. Cultivate patience. Slow down and relax into the experience you're currently having. The medicine will find you when it's ready. When we begin to see each day as a personalized menu of opportunity for our unique spiritual evolution, the challenges and hiccups, which will never stop, by the way, take on a whole new meaning. They become perfect portions of exactly what you need to continue healing and strengthening the inner muscles, namely patience, compassion, connection, and presence. How do you know if you've leveled up? Simple. Can you remain undistracted and present in the face of the same challenge tomorrow? If so, on to the next bit of work. If not, failure is the best way to learn. Remember the Japanese proverb, fall 7 times, stand up 8. Epilogue. If you've made it this far, I thank you for giving my words your presence. Every moment in our lives is precious, and I'd like to pay you back with a pearl from one of the wisest souls I know, my 5-year-old son, River. I thought I knew something about life until I had a child. Roman once warned me that raising a family is the most powerful evolutionary medicine on the planet. Well, he wasn't joking. This kid has been schooling me since he got here. I'm in River's bedroom tent one night, and we're doing our usual pre-slumber routine of thanking Pachamama for our life, for each other, and for everything she's given us. He stops mid-sentence, turns to me, and asks, "Dad, why do we say amen after we say the grateful things to Pachamama?" Because it helps us send our prayers up to God and the universe. What is God? God is the big bright light that we all came from and that we're all going to. Like the moon? Kind of, but different. God is the light that we all have inside us that makes us who we are. You mean like love? Yes, God is love. He stares into my eyes for a good minute, saying nothing, transmitting something I'll never be able to categorize or give name to. His eyes widen, and he lets out a giggle that quickly morphs into a yawn. Good night, Dad. I'm gonna leave my light on, okay? Acknowledgements. Everything I do creatively winds up a family affair, whether they like it or not. Without my brilliantly talented and loving tribe, this book would not have been possible. Thank you, Mom, for bringing me into this world and showing me how to be fiercely compassionate, but also discerning. You are always the first person I show rough drafts to, because I trust your intellect and understanding of who I am. To my older sister, Liz, who edited this book 3 times, I've been looking up to you since I was 0, so handing you the literary reins felt preordained. Thank you for the days of work you put into this. To my pop, thank you for being an unwavering support system to me, always. I wrote this with the spirit of your intellect sitting on my shoulder, prodding me to include more descriptors and supporting data when things felt a little thin. To my soul brother, Mark Deraspinis, who pulled back the veil of this reality and invited me to take a peek 15 years ago. Honored to be on this path with you. To my lifelong friends, Nick Ortner and Kevin Gianni, order of appearance is not an indicator of preference. Thank you for holding me accountable to my purpose on this planet, and for keeping the bond strong. To my poolside conspirators, Pedram Shojai and Jeff Hayes, your candidness, humor, and creative genius never cease to inspire. Thank you, Roman Hannes, for helping me see what this all truly is, and for holding space for my, at times, agonizingly slow spiritual growth. Not sure how we find ourselves in this cosmic dance, but I'm honored to be here. Thank you to Reed Tracy and Patty Gift from Hay House for putting your faith in this book and for giving me the freedom to venture off the reservation when the subject matter called for it. Grateful for the opportunity. Thank you to Sandra Kring for taking me under your wing in the 11th hour, schooling me in the art of storytelling, and helping me navigate the home stretch. Thank you to Shannon Kring Bousette for all the work you do on behalf of the indigenous communities across the Americas and for being a true friend. Thank you to Malene Patel and Deb Larrabee. Your tireless dedication to serving the sacred science community is such a gift. Without you two, none of this would be possible. To Dan Bailey, we had no idea what we were getting ourselves into with the sacred science film, and you were willing to step off the ledge with me. Thank you for that. And an additional thank you to Dan for being one of the funniest people on planet Earth. To Carl Bailey, thank you for believing in us. To Brock Bertloff, thank you for all the time and love you put into each frame of the sacred science film and for living out the lessons we learned in the jungle. My deepest gratitude goes to my beloved wife, Michelle Polizzi. My work is your work. We've shared a bigger vision for this world since our 20s, and little by little, the evolution is starting to happen. Thank you for booting me out the door every time the medicine comes knocking. I'm humbled and inspired by the unbounded love you have for me and our 2 boys. Lastly, thank you, dear listener, for understanding that you're more than the flesh, bone, and blood that has been listening to this story. Your quest for truth in this existence is contagious. Don't stop. No matter what.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.